On Tuesday evening, I attended a talk at the DAI in Tübingen over the book Sweetness and Blood by Michael Scott Moore. Afterwards, I got to sit down and ask him more about his experiences with the history of surfing.
You are from Redondo Beach, California, and do you think that had a main factor in your interest in surfing?
Well, yeah, it's where I learned to surf, so the whole South Bay, not just Redondo Beach, but Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach. I learned to surf in the South Bay, and so it was naturally kind of interesting to me when I moved to Europe and found out that other people surfed. I knew that in theory, but it was kind of a surprise that there was a serious surf scene in Germany. Not a big one, but a serious one. The guys in Munich who surf on waves in the canal that feed the Isar down there are pretty good. And what was surprising was the sense of history to some surf cultures around.
In each of these cultures, it represents a freedom of sorts for the people that do enjoy surfing. And specifically, what do you think are some examples of that for Germany?
Well, I mean, that's what was surprising. And the book is a bit of a travel book, and every place I went, it was hard not to notice that surfing was associated with freedom and independence. And in Germany, it's really associated with a sort of... In the 60s, German culture changed in many Western countries. But it was a bit more stark in Germany. There was a real separation from the old way of life here, which is associated with fascism and all that sort of thing. It got its start on Sylt, which really had, first of all, it was sort of upscale, but apart from that, it really had an eccentric, sort of carefree beach lifestyle that had nothing to do with the rest of Germany, and that's where surfing sort of took off.
You talked about coming to Germany and finding that, and that's kind of what sparked your interest in being able to seek out more cultures and their history of surfing. And do you think that's one of the main reasons why you became a journalist?
Well, no, it's not one of the main reasons I became a journalist. I was a journalist already, but I decided to approach it like a journalist rather than like a surfer.
Right.
I was interested simply because I've been surfing all my life, but I decided to go around to these countries and approach them in the way that any reader might want to know about them. In other words, with as much of a sense as I could garner of the culture and the politics and the recent history of the country that could kind of explain how surfing mixes with, you know, what might be an unexpected broader society. So in other words, Germany, Israel, Japan, and some of these Muslim countries like Morocco and Indonesia might be unexpected places for surfing to catch hold. But they did. But it did in these countries.
You talk about that being a problem with some of the religions or taboos, such as Muslim and Islam, and why surfing was a problem with those certain religions.
Well, in the Muslim countries that I wrote about, there weren't that many stark examples of somebody actually saying, no, you can't surf because we are Muslim. The starkest example was actually in the Gaza Strip. I went there when I also wrote about surfers in Israel. And in Gaza, it's still ruled by Hamas, and which is a conservative radical organization, actually. And they don't like it when girls surf. That's a pretty good example. Girls can surf. They have to go out in full hijab. If they surf beyond a certain age, 14 is kind of cutting it close, then their reputation really... Actually, it's socially impossible for them to surf beyond puberty, because then they're suspect. Then they're out in the waves with boys in public, or men in public, and that's just an impossible thing. That was a very stark example. Another stark example was in Bali, in Kuta. Bali is a Hindu island, but it's part of a Muslim nation, and it was targeted because... In Kuta, there are just lots of Westerners. It's become such a tourist town that the Islamists in 2002, who laid a couple of bombs in nightclubs in Kuta, just wanted to kill Westerners. And the interesting part that I didn't know until I started to work on the book was that Kuta became a tourist town only after it became a destination for surfers. So in some sense, surfing trailed this sort of tourist culture and have to say it's a junk culture, you know, this sort of clubbing party, get smashed till you drop culture.
And you talk about how you said Americans, it's kind of a way, surfing was a way of spreading pop culture in that, and you also bring in the club scenes and whatnot, which, what are some of the cons of these things coming in to some of these cities that you talked about?
Well, that's a good example. So first of all, I grew up in L.A., and on the beach especially, there are now clubs that I don't go into. I mean, there are these enormous clubs where people get smashed that are different from even from the kind of thing that I grew up with. And you see them in Kuta, and you see them in other surf capitals, like Cornwall. It's not a well-known surf capital, but it's surf capital. And the locals complain about it. On the one hand, the locals learn to surf. On the other hand, the locals don't like the sort of party culture that comes along with it. So that's the meaning of the title, Sweetness and Blood. There's a sort of split legacy for surfing when it moves around the world.